Please, clerk.
Item 124, Office of Equity and Human Rights, 2016 Annual Report.
Commissioner Udaly?
That's you.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. There was notes here that she wanted to say something. I apologize. Good morning. Good afternoon, whatever it is. Whatever day it is. I don't remember anymore.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Trent.
Mayor, commissioners. While Mr. Lim finds what he's going to be offering us a little bit later, let me just say it's truly my pleasure to be here and to bring the City Council this annual report documenting the work of the Office of Equity and Human Rights for the past year. My name is Dante James. I'm the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and almost here on my five-year anniversary. So it is an honor. These reports are actually not required, but I think it's of paramount importance to the council and by extension the community. Here's the work that has been created, that has created an unprecedented engagement internally and externally, and what this office continues to accomplish in the area of social justice on behalf of you, who were elected to ensure that all Portlanders are treated equitably in how the city does business. This report is somewhat of a milestone because on March 12, 2012, this office opened its doors and began the work of infusing equity throughout the halls of city government. We're knocking on the door of the five-year mark. And when I first arrived in this city, I was told by some that this office would not last for 5 years. So I and my staff are gratified to still be here doing this work that focuses on improving the lives of all Portlanders through improving how the city thinks about delivering its services by first starting with the area and the idea of addressing the disparities that exist for people of color and people with a disability. I would truly first like to thank my staff for their passion, commitment, patience, perseverance, and expertise, and I ask them to stand or wave so they can be publicly appreciated for their work. There we go. Thank you, Carla. I also want to acknowledge the continually growing number of city staff and city leaders who have supported the work by making it theirs and taking it upon themselves to ensure that equity is a part of their work. I also want to acknowledge the Portland residents and city staff who have come here to support or offer their remarks. Let's see if I can make this work. There we go. Not only in this past year, but right at this moment, we are watching the world, this country, and this city struggle with the issues of race. However, we have also seen city staff and bureaus become more comfortable with discussions of race and discussions about institutional racism and discussions and making space for personal and institutional reflection and how they can work to be part of change that deconstructs the racism. The Office of Equity and Human Rights has been focused on and driven to reduce the disparities that exist that are based on race and disability. This is not just a job, it's a calling for those who do this work. Perseverance and constant vigilance are required in order to deal with the many trials, tribulations, and alternative facts that continue to challenge this work. For example, recent data reported just last week in the Portland Tribune, which is doing a series of articles on the history and current racism that exists in the city of Portland as well as the state. They pulled up data that clearly identified the racial disparities that exist in the criminal justice system just in Multnomah County. From police stops to the fines levied for jaywalking, people of color are disproportionately and detrimentally impacted by the actions of the criminal justice system. This office is constantly engaged in working with various parts of PPB to encourage, support, and challenge aspects of their bureau. And the idea that the ratio is 27 to 1, specifically for black folks to be cited for spitting in the public, is just amazing. It's just an amazing number. And you can see the rest of this. I would encourage you, if you haven't read the article in the Tribune, please take a moment and read it. Because then it goes to address the financial impact because of the disparity in the fines that are levied for each and every one of these things that they've cited as disparities just in citations. You've received a copy of the annual report that details some of the highlights of our work. Our goal is and always has been to ensure the community benefits from the increased understanding and use of equity principles by city government in the delivery of its services. We have tried to stay true to the Portland Plan and the many five-year action items within it, specifically in each of the heading areas. We have closed the gaps. We have engaged the community. We have built partnerships. We have launched a racial justice initiative. We have increased focus on disability equity, and we have increased internal accountability. So to those ends, just this past year, what is some of the work we have accomplished? We continue to conduct and facilitate our equity training. Our training curriculum and approach is a sought-after model because it is designed to offer concrete understanding and approaches to equity work. The evaluations of our training show an overall satisfaction rate of 91%, which is just an unheard of rate given the diversity of city employees and their perspectives. We have engaged the community by holding a community listening session attended by over 120 residents who offered thoughts and suggestions on issues of importance to their communities. You can see some of these suggestions and comments on page 7 and 8 of the report. Our racial justice initiative work continues with almost every bureau's completion of a racial equity assessment and the creation of a 5-year racial equity plan. These plans each have goals, metrics, timetables, and measures of accountability broken into 1-year increments for review and evaluation. The plans are currently on each bureau's website, and they are on our website so that Portland residents can see, evaluate, and hold accountable a bureau's work against their plan. You can also see in the report on pages 5 and 6 some of the promising practices that bureaus have as goals to address disparities and improve their service delivery and their internal work. So we have a short video that will provide a little bit more information about the racial equity plan process and why it's such a vital resource in advancing racial equity in the city.
All 26 bureaus are creating 5-year racial equity plans that are supposed to operationalize or, you know, bring to life the city's racial equity goals and strategies that City Council adopted last year. So the racial equity plans themselves start with outcomes, you know, the city's kind of long-term aspirational goals, and then ask bureaus to create these 5-year objectives, kind of where do bureaus want to be in 5 years.
So the purpose of the 5-year racial equity plan is to ensure that the bureaus focus on their internal processes, on, you know, the institutional disparities we may have within the system, to look at how we do business with the community, whether we're using an equity lens.
Some of the major concerns that we are taking a deeper dive in is making sure that a racial equity lens is used as far as contracting and our community engagement. Those are two of the biggest components of our racial equity plan.
Another big theme is community engagement, so everything from just greater access and understanding of existing community services to building partnerships with community-based organizations that are culturally specific or working with leaders of color to better, you know, design or evaluate programs.
The director of a bureau can continue to provide that focus over time, especially when we do big things like budget and do big things like produce communication plans and hire. Those kinds of things, the director's office can provide focus for the bureau. And so those are the kinds of things. Remove barriers, another thing I can do at my level.
The plans themselves aren't supposed to be the end all. That's kind of the beginning of the real work.
I just want people to know that this is going to be difficult work. It takes very hard conversations. Change is very difficult for the city, for bureaus, but it's very important.
Really, at the end of the day, it's making sure that everyone feels included at the table. The amount of work that the Office of Equity and Human Rights in guiding the bureaus to do this work has been amazing.
And I think a more systemic, deep, passionate approach to this from the top, the elected officials right to line staff, is the only way we can begin to make progress. And so I'm really proud to work for an organization that's taking that kind of approach on this issue.
Communities of color nationwide and in Portland have been organizing for generations and decades for government to respond to issues of racial inequity. So I think this will be the first time that the city of Portland has really put in a very detailed commitment to addressing very specific racial inequities. And the measures associated with those commitments are an opportunity for communities of color to and staff of color to hold the institution accountable.
So once again, thanks to Jeff Selby for his amazing videography and as well as putting the report together. I mean, no, nobody gets to steal him away from me. The work that each of the bureaus really did to put their racial equity plans together was amazing. The assessment, the entire process of assessment through goals was truly, for many and most bureaus, a very involved process. They took it very seriously from the directors on down. They're still extremely engaged. They want more engagement from us. And so I will tell you that, you know, it is a model. As many of the other things that the city is doing, it's a model around the country for how this work is institutionalizing itself and embedding itself in just how the city does its work. And so it's designed to be a living document. Each of you know every bureau has an affirmative action report that it has to do, affirmative action plan that everybody dreads when they have to do it. They can't wait to get it done, and then it goes on a shelf until the very next year when they have to do another one or when they're going to hire somebody and they get a report on what their deficiencies are in who they've hired. This is truly designed to be a living document. It's been appreciated and accepted that way, and I really expect that in the next just 1 year we'll be able to see that the needle is moved in many of the areas that you see in the report that people have highlighted as what they want to focus on. We have continued our work to close the gaps in disparity, with the most recent example being our support of DEEP, the Diverse and Empowered Employees of Portland, which saw the completion of its first annual nine-month leadership development program, initially for women and Latino and African American employees. DEEP has also added affinity groups for veterans, employees with disabilities, and Hawaiian, Asian, and Pacific Islanders. The goal being to increase the number of people of color who are managers and or supervisors in this city. The city's workforce overall has increased in significant measure in the last several years, while the percentages of managers of color has remained significantly smaller. And if you haven't looked at our dashboard recently on our website, it will be able to certainly indicate for you by bureau what the demographics are in each of the bureaus, broken down by employment status, supervisor, non-supervisor, full-time, part-time, gender, disability, veteran status. So I encourage you to, if you have not, take a look at the dashboard, the most recent version of the dashboard. It is updated monthly through SAP, so it's truly up to date. And the bureaus always say that it's a benefit as they do what they do in understanding the demographics of who they're serving. We plan on enlarging our engagement on the issue of disability. Portland can become the leader in disability equity work in the same way that it has become a leader in racial equity work. That will require, however, a citywide commitment of resources. In the upcoming budget, we have asked for a commitment of additional resources and personnel to accomplish this. Also, the Bureau of Human Resources will need additional resources to ensure the fruition of their efforts to lead on making this city truly a model employer of people with disability. These things will require your commitment individually and collectively to be not just supporters, but advocates for this work. We continue to build and grow partnerships through our engagement with the Government Alliance on Race and Equity. For example, this office co-hosted, along with the City Attorney's Office, a training by internationally known legal expert John Powell on how the city can move this work forward while avoiding legal pitfalls. Additionally, we're also working with procurement services the county, and Metro to address the idea of a regional community benefits agreement for minority contractors and people of color in the construction industry workforce. Our office completed and trained city staff on the use of a racial equity toolkit. And there are currently 8 bureaus that are using it on various projects as pilots to evaluate how to improve equity outcomes. Additionally, we supported and worked with the Human Rights Commission as it dealt with considerable community pressure in preparing its recommendation to the city's Committee on Socially Responsible Investment. I'm sure you remember that process. In conjunction with the toolkit, our collaboration with the budget office and our equity budgeting process continues to be viewed as a model for other jurisdictions. Just by example, I've been asked and invited to come to New Orleans later on this spring to meet with city leadership to help them to create a very similar approach. At the end of last year, the deputy mayor and a couple of her staff came and sat in my office for an entire day going through what and how my office functions and what we've done with the city and what we've embedded in the city, and they're in the process of now rolling out their own equity work in their equity office and really want to see how it can be tied to budget work, because if you know it's important, follow the money. So they're really trying to engage in an equity process around their budgeting. The office became the oversight bureau for the city's Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission, bringing the number of commissions the office is responsible for to 3, including the Human Rights Commission and the Commission on Disability. The commissions take a considerable amount of time to properly support and staff, with the important expectation for each of them to advise you in the subject areas. Moving forward, as I mentioned, we are preparing to expand our work in the areas of disability equity and have asked for, in the upcoming budget, additional staff more than the 1.5 we currently have to do that work. We're also asking for support for a centralized model for continuing the racial equity work that we do. In the 5 years of this office's existence, we've received no budget increase. We have only had our budget cuts that were offered and subsequently taken. We've taken on additional programs, some with no accompanying staff, or received staff with a new program, but nothing to support increases to our core mission. Our goal with this new model is to provide specific liaisons to each bureau in a similar manner as the budget office does or as human resources does. Many bureaus have their own internal HR person or budget person, but both HR and CBO set the standards by which this work is accomplished. I'm asking that equity be given the same consideration. This is not to take away from the work that's currently being accomplished by any one person in any bureau with the title of equity manager, but there's not even a dotted line to my office for that work, and my office doesn't necessarily know some of the work that's being done. Case in point, several bureaus have brought in outside consultants or trainers at a cost of several $1,000s. Some of the work might have been done by my office, some maybe not. However, not knowing what the content is, what the approach is, whether there could have been efficiencies in sharing between bureaus, had we known, or some bureaus that want their own specific individuals to manage their equity plans, creates disjointed work and creates more silos that exist as we try to then narrow those silos. So I ask you to consider the efficiency and greater effectiveness of a centralized model. Before I introduce now our invited speakers, I would like to introduce you to Matt Lim from the Bureau of Technological Services Enterprise Business Solutions. He's going to introduce to you an amazing tool that will be part of OEHR's website. He has done this on his own time as a member of the HAPA Asian and Pacific Islander Affinity Group. And I'll let him preview it for you and explain how it's going to work. But if it is all that I've heard it to be, it's an absolutely amazing tool that will be a benefit to each and every bureau in the city. So, Mr. Lim?
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Well, time to show you guys some eye candy here. Let's get this going. Okay.
Can you move the microphone a little closer?
Oh, sure. So I'm here to present just some business I've been working on with some publicly available data, specifically pertaining to demographics. And so the point of these visits are to show what type of data is out there and what type of analysis we can do if we have enough resources and people dedicated to just mining and analyzing this data. So bear with me. I know the resolution here is kind of small, and hopefully we can kind of read it. But here, I've just got an example of some poverty data that's broken down by race. And also, I have an overlay here related to population growth and whatnot. So you can see here with this dashboard tool, we have some advanced filtering capabilities. Let's say I just want to look at a few neighborhoods or neighborhood coalitions. Once it re-renders. But essentially, this Tableau dashboard tool allows us to do some really advanced visuals, analytics, and is a very, I would say, convenient delivery method for getting analysis out there. So here I've got a couple selected here. And you can do the same thing with census tracts, and you can do a double filter on that. So here we're looking at census tracts within those coalitions. And if you look at the legend here, the bigger the, the bigger the shape on the left side, that represents basically a tract or a block group where if you compare the proportional poverty rates between people of color and white individuals, you can see that there are some discrepancies. Although there are certain instances, like this census tract right here, where we actually do have a higher rate of white poverty. And here, you have a graph down here that coincides with the map and all the filters. So as you can see, those few neighborhood coalitions I selected from the filter up top filtered the graph below. Now, if I want everything, I just go back up here, click all, and there we go. In the interest of time, I'm going to go ahead and move to the next visual, and I can go ahead and send people a link if they want to dive into this type of stuff. And so there's a lot of talk about disability, and there's actually some really good disability data out there available from the Census Bureau. It's regularly updated, maintained by them, and it's a tool that I don't think has been leveraged as well as it could be. So here, we've got some poverty data here, right? Same filters as before. We have another poverty rate comparison between the tracts. And we also have proportional symbols as well to represent absolute counts. And here, I know it's a complex map, but I just wanted to do something really complex to show you guys what's possible. We zoom in on the map here, I can show you what's going on. So on this map, we have every single sidewalk in Portland and every arterial and major arterial. And because of a masking trick, if you look here, the gray areas where there's no blue streets, that's a sidewalk gap. And if you zoom in even closer, those little purple things, it's got a render. It's a really big tile set map. But once that renders, those little corners right there that are purple, those are ADA ramps. And the orange ones down here are corner ramps. And we have every single one in Portland mapped here. And it coincides with the disability data. I am assuming there are issues with mobility with certain disabled people with disabilities. So I think if we can take this really rich census data and combine it with our own, we can have some really good analysis. Like this thing right here, I did in a few days. So, I mean, there is there's quite a few things that are possible. And there is an opportunity for if we focus on a few data sets that have lots of dimensions. Like I was able to collect something like 600 dimensions or columns from each of these census tracts, and I haven't even begun to completely mine what the Census Bureau has. So if we can have those large data sets that are standardized, that are vetted, that are verified, do some centralized standardized analysis from one point of view and provide that information to all the other bureaus, you establish a metric of equity measures, a and performance metrics that everyone else can be aware of and adhere to much easier than right now. I mean, you got PBOT, they have their own equity lens, BPS has their own, every bureau more or less has their own, and we don't really know how to consolidate those different lenses. It's almost like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And so with tools like these and just amazing data resources combined with our own data resources, there are limitless possibilities.
So you could do point of time data evolution as well. I mean, you could actually show how the map is evolving with time.
Oh, yeah. We have census data that dates back, I mean, ever since the census was conceived. So, yeah, we have everything. As long as whenever they've been collecting the data, in which time frames they've added new dimensions to those sets, we can track it back like 20 years perhaps with a lot of these dimensions. So, yeah, lots of good stuff.
That's really impressive. Could you, Mr. James, as promised, very impressive.
I can't take any credit. But could you, for example, overlay the census data of who in the community has disability with where there's a gap in sidewalk or where there's a gap in curb cuts in that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, here, if you look at the content filter down here, all these are the different demographics of people with disabilities, which within those census tracts. So we have it broken down at such a granular level. And this is just ethnicity. We have gender, we have income group, we have native Oregonians, we have Native American citizens, and foreign-born nationals as well. All that broken down by economics, age, we even have mortgage values. We have a lot of affordable housing data that I'm not sure why no one's mining. I've mined it. It's all there.
So what you're describing, if I hear you, you could find who is a black, wealthy person with a disability in any particular area and determine where.
Well, you technically can. So these are broken down by the track level. So that's like the level of observation that you have there. Yeah. But there are certain geospatial techniques where we can populate those census tracts or those block groups within a certain statistical accuracy. So, for instance, if I did something like a dot density algorithm, for instance, I would have a track, right? You'd have the shape there. It would pinpoint every single individual in that shape within a certain amount of confidence. So, yeah, it's possible.
Okay. So that's a bit of concern with what's going on at the national level.
We thought about that, too. Yes.
So what kind of safeguards are there that people cannot be just targeted instead of just having the demographics there?
I would say level of skill, because in order to do something like that, you need a specialized ensemble model, and I made a specialized one that only I know of. So, yeah, I mean, someone else has to, you know, get a master's and have their hand at it. Otherwise, it's pretty tough to do.
So you could block the data, though, at a neighborhood level. I mean, you could keep at a larger scale
at
a granular level, and it would still tell you the trends, where infrastructure investments are needed, where there's gaps. I mean, it's still very relevant.
Oh, yeah. We can expand those boundaries as much as we want. When it comes to shrinking those boundaries down, that's where it gets tricky, because when you aggregate up, you have those different components, and you can just like add them all together, for instance. When you're breaking it down, you don't know what that distribution is within that geographic boundary. So that's where you have to do a lot of statistics, a lot of data science, a lot of weird stuff. So,
and Mayor, we have had some discussions about what should go on Portland maps and what should not go on Portland maps. Just recently we were talking about the energy score. So I do, you know, I am seriously concerned about this issue, and so it would be at some point good to have a city policy on how much data we share and how we protect data.
Well, to be fair, all that data that I got, the majority, like all of it's from the Census Bureau, so it's not like we even have control over it.
Right, and as you just mentioned, not all of us have masters and are able to do something like that. If we do have access to those resources, there's still a question of what safeguards do we put on the new data that we just got?
Well, that's tricky, because when you don't have control of the data, who it's going to, who can access it. I mean, the Census Bureau data is available to everyone. It's funded through taxpayer dollars. Everyone has a right to it.
But as we put this on our website, we can limit how far down you can go into the granular level.
Yes.
So I think that's what you're asking.
Oh, yeah. I've done that with a number of dashboards I've developed for different bureaus. I have a really good security process that I go through where it locks it down, and I would wager that my dashboards are more secure than the other Tableau dashboards out there.
So that is what we had thought about. So we're not going to be able to pinpoint one person living on this block who has this particular demographic information. Yes.
Thank you. Okay. That's a tremendous presentation. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right.
Well, I wasn't lying. That's amazing.
It is.
So that's essentially the report. What I will continue to say and sing the praises of this office and my staff is that this office clearly and truly continues to be a leader in doing equity work around the country. I've got a phone call next week with somebody in, is it Texas?
Where is my phone call?
Long Beach, California. So we get calls. I was going back to Denver, and they heard I was coming, so I had to go up to Fort Collins and meet with the city manager and others. So the office is known around the country for the work that it does. And so I truly hope that you can understand and respect. It just seems like we just keep rolling out what we do. This has happened in a short time frame in 5 years. Seattle is kind of the OG doing this work. They've been doing this now for 12, 13 years, I guess. In some ways, they are ahead of us. In other ways, we're ahead of them. But I think between the two, we are absolutely leading the way and are the models for how this work gets done across the country. And certainly, nobody else is specifically focused on disability in the way that we are.
Can I just jump in for a second?
Yes.
Because a little bit of history was just made. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals just rendered their decision, and it was a 3-0 decision upholding the state of Washington's the federal judge in the state of Washington blocking the national stays in place until the Supreme Court takes it up.
Very good. Thanks,
great.
Thanks, Commissioner, for letting us know that.
I guess you weren't paying attention to me, though, but thank you, sir.
So I have a question. When we started the office, and I agree, it's been really satisfying to see the focus on race and disability and to be a leader nationwide on that. And obviously the three main, when we were trying to explain to people 6 years ago, what do we even mean by this? We mean opportunities in jobs, contracting, and services. And we have reports during the budgeting process as far as where the different bureaus are providing services and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. For my bureau directors, every year I ask them, what are the demographics of our workforce and what were the year before, have we been making progress? Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of, year by year, are we getting to have a city workforce that looks more like the demographics of our city?
Yes. When I started, I believe the demographic number of people of color was 17%. And the last time I looked, it was about 21.5%, 22% people of color. As I said, the managers and supervisory number is half of that. But the demographics overall for the workforce has increased, I think, a good number.
So in addition to the wonderful information in the report, for the next one, I would like us to keep, putting that in there. Mm-hmm. And also, I know you've only just started working recently with the Equitable Purchasing and Procurement Commission,
close
something
enough.
Like that.
Right.
That's something that I know Mayor Wheeler is very much focused on, and it's a piece that I think we haven't made all that much progress over the past 8 years that I've been here. So to be thinking of tracking that, the numbers of the contracting that goes out, and also the demographics of the workforce, as well as of who owns the businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great work, and there's always more to do.
Correct. Thank you. I would suggest that the contracting numbers are not good. The workforce numbers are not particularly good. And I would also suggest that it's, as much as you don't want to think about the dollar amount, it's time for another disparity study that I think would give you a different answer than the one that happened 6 years ago in terms of what the MBEWB percentage is looking like and what can be done. since the last one said that essentially there was no disparities in subcontracting. I would suggest the number is different today, and it would give you a, it would recognize a disparity that would allow the city to do something much more concrete in terms of what it can require. So,
Dante, let me, if I could just make a comment. You mentioned a couple times about your budget ask and hiring staff to follow up on the model employer policy we've adopted and the work we're required to do under the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Right.
I'm gonna be generally supportive of those asks, and I'll tell you why. Santa Lawrence in my office, Office of Equity, HR, and the Disability Commission, and I are all working on a pilot program to become an employer of choice for adults with intellectual disabilities. And you said we're some cases we're ahead of Seattle, in some instances we're behind Seattle. Seattle's ahead of us on this one. And it's because a number of years ago their mayor said we're going to be a model employer, and it was organized out of the mayor's office, and they now have 33 employees full-time with benefits that have been recruited and are successfully employed. But the there's a lot of hoops we have to jump through to make this work, but what I have learned is that we don't yet have the full capacity as a city to handle this and to all the other commitments that we've made under the model employer policy. So if we're going to stand behind that policy and what we want to do, we have to have staff to implement it. And since the council has been emphatic that this is a priority, I think we have to look seriously at budget time of filling those positions.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So thank you for your time.
I had a question.
Oh, yes.
So just going back to your recommendation that you become sort of like a CBO or human resource office, budget office or human resource office, providing centralized assistance to all the bureaus. Is that coming full circle from where we started 5 years ago? Because it seems to me the drumbeat at the time was to have each bureau have its own equity director. And, in fact, I think each bureau has gone on to do that.
Well, that was never my drumbeat.
That was not your drumbeat. Okay.
And currently five bureaus have – well, four bureaus have an equity manager, and one has someone who has equity in her title, but she's not a manager. So.
Okay. Okay.
And so there will be, I think, in the upcoming budget, asks for bureaus to specifically have either an equity manager or someone who's charged with being a program manager who will oversee their equity plan, which is what a liaison from my office could do as a part of what their duties would be.
Right.
And so that's really what I think the centralized model will be able to do, is provide that level of service and greater engagement with a specific bureau to understand how they do what they do and what their needs are, in the same way CBO does it now or HR does it now. So in terms of efficiency, it saves, I think, money from each bureau now having to find money or ask you for money for a new person when it could be centralized in my office for consistency and commonality of the work and oversight of how it gets done.
Okay. And then the other question I had was well, I mean, we started out 5 years ago focusing on people of color and
people with disability.
Disability.
Correct.
Is it time to, 5 years later, is it time to expand that universe of where we're looking?
I would probably just say watch TV and say no. The opportunity to focus allows then, I would suggest that the reason that the ease of the restroom issue of gender specific was made easier because we'd already have these conversations about equity the last 4 years. And so I don't think it's time to expand, because it's still too easy for everyone to default to the next conversation of let's talk about class, let's talk about gender, let's talk about something else, and ignore the issue of race, even though it's just so preeminent and prominent in this country currently. So I would say no, even though I get that question quite a bit, I would say it's still not time, that we need to maintain a focus on addressing this.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz, I have a question for you. Dante said something interesting earlier. We said that there's no requirement for an annual report, but he's brought one forward. When you led the effort with then Mayor Adams did we not mandate an annual report? And if not, should we at some point amend that?
I think any equity director in his or her right mind would want to bring an annual report, because clearly we need to have these conversations. You know, the Commissioner just, Saltzman just said, are we done? The answer is clearly not. Also, we want to invite all of our friends and sometimes people who are concerned about us to be able to come in for a public hearing to say, this is how we think it's happening, and these are what the community wants to see, because we're still very much focused on city staff, city programs. We're not where we need to be there yet. So in terms of broadening our outreach and doing work in the community, there's other that's not what the focus of this particular office is supposed to be.
The only reason I raise it is that we mandate annual reports for just about everything. So I don't want this omission to indicate that this council doesn't have a strong desire annually to have you come out with a report and then to follow up on progress.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate it. And I might need to double check. I know that there was a requirement for within the first 6 months to have a report. I just don't recall that there was one required every year, even though it was what I was going to do anyway. So
there were some people who thought we wouldn't be there after 6 months.
Exactly.
For the record, Commissioner Ritz, I didn't say, are we done? I suggested we expand. Mm-hmm. Are we ready to expand to look at other issues around equity? Mm-hmm. Not to declare victory with race and physical disability.
Yes, I apologize. My wording was incorrect.
And I think, Commissioner, that we have, I mean, when you look at the gender, you know, neutral restrooms, there are the conversations. And when we talk about, you know, the budget equity tool, our focus is race and disability. Well, what I tell the bureaus all the time is that's not your focus. Your focus is equity broadly. And so using the tools that we provide, you can substitute any identity you want and get and work through the same process to address issues of any other issue. So that's kind of how we approach it. Okay. So at this time, I'd like to introduce our invited speakers. I have a few, after which there may be some individuals sign up to offer remarks, and then after that, I'll be asking you to accept the annual report and then be happy to answer any more questions that you may have.
Thank you, sir.
So at this time, Don Uchiyama, who is Deputy Director of BES, Stephen Holt, who is a community consultant, Deidre Hall, who is from the Portland Commission on Disability, Joe McFerrin, who is president and CEO of POIC and Rosemary Anderson High School, and also chair of the BMA Workforce Subcommittee. Musa Olol from the Somali American Council of Oregon woke up ill this morning and asked me to relay his apologies and also send me some remarks that, just some very brief remarks that I'll also read to you when we're done here. So I'll let them go.
Thanks. Thank you. Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, I'm very pleased to be here today. Sorry, I have a little bit of a cold. I'm Don Uchiyama, the assistant director, newly appointed assistant director at the Bureau of Environmental Services. And on behalf of Mike Jordan, Director Mike Jordan, and my bureau, I'm very pleased to offer our strong support for the Office of Human Equity and Human Rights and acknowledge this important milestone with their annual report. OEHR has provided great assistance to BES while developing our equity plan and has served as a really steady guidepost as we've navigated our way through the cultural transition that's happening in our bureau from planning to implementation. We're moving into implementation. And to that end, I just want to highlight a few things. With Commissioner Fish's leadership, we've created the position of assistant director and now have dedicated management in my position to guide employees and guide the equity work that we do to tie back into the central model that OEHR has created. And we have recently rechartered our Committee for Equity and Diversity. We've had a committee for 10 years. We've rechartered it to meet the goals that are now stated in our plan. We have money in our budget set aside for our equity work. And we're continuing to build off of the great community relations that we've had over the years with programs like the Community and Watershed Stewardship Program, our tree planting program, Portland Harbor, and more recently, our strategic plan. So we have a number of great programs that we really are looking to advance our community relations around equity. And looking forward, we're really looking forward to participating in innovative recruitment and contracting practices. There's a lot of potential there for us, and we're signed up and ready to go. So this work would not be possible without, or is coordinated without, the work of OEHR's institutional framework and leadership, and we're really looking forward to making more advances in the years ahead. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of council and mayor. Thank you for having me here today. My name is Deidre Hall, and I'm the newest appointed commissioner with the Portland Commission on Disability. I've been volunteering with the commission since June of 2016 and became an official member in October. I've been asked to speak about the importance of disability equity work that OEHR and the commission do for our community. I can tell you that I'm continually impressed by the dedication of OEHR's staff. Nicole Sharon, who serves as our advisor, is also involved with several major citywide policy initiatives and other bureaus. I know this because she's constantly bringing us new things to work on or asking us for feedback on surveys. Dante James makes time to have a presence at our meetings and has met with various PCOD commissioners. And my fellow commissioners are all very passionate about making Portland the most inclusive city. In my short time on the commission, I've been involved with making recommendations about drive-through zoning, downtown street improvements, ODOT's transition plan, infill housing recommendations, and helping to restructure PCOD. My fellow commissioners have been working on the city's model employer policy, advocating for more disability resources for ADA Title II compliance, and a checklist for bureaus when hiring disability awareness trainers. Now more than ever, it's important that the voices of the disability communities are heard. Portlanders with disabilities are entitled to accessible housing, employment, transportation, education, and recreation. OEHR, PCOD, and the members of council have a great opportunity in the coming years to set the example and inspire other cities to follow suit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone, and hello, commissioners. Mayor, I don't think we've met yet. I'm Dr. Stephen Holt, and I own a consulting company called TriExcellence. And in that capacity, I'm certified as a DBE or gone through that MWESB process, which I'd love to talk about it sometime all by itself. But today, I'm here to speak specifically for the Office of Equity, and I'm going to kind of have a twofold approach. I'm going to talk about the office itself, and then I want to talk about equity as a whole very briefly. The office itself, I think, has done a phenomenal job in the present structure, with a charge to train and educate and work with all of the bureaus under its current governmental system without any direct response or accountability of those bureaus then to do that work. I think to have accomplished what it's accomplished is nothing short than miraculous. With the staffing and the challenges they have to do what they do, to be sitting here at this moment and having moved the needle as far as the needle has been moved is tremendous. But to go from 17% to 21% or 22%, while that is worth celebrating, it's still a far cry from where we need to be. I think we'd all agree with that. And so to respond, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but to respond to, is it time to focus on or engage around something broader? I think what really should happen is we focus the lens even more intensely to make sure that we're reflecting the needs of the community and the needs of the city. And so the staff is a passionate staff and a very talented and capable staff. I am presently involved working with the five-year strategic plan with the Office of Equity and Human Rights to say what is the next rollout, what are the next steps that need to be taken. And so definitely more of a focus and drill down in terms of the educating, in terms of the equipping, in terms of the empowering of the bureaus and making sure that there's consistency and quality and that the work is being evaluated and being evaluated well, and that the adjustments and changes that need to happen in order to hit equity goals, that there's resourcing and support for that. So I'm a strong advocate and a strong believer. Part of the challenge with the Office of Equity is that they are so stretched from my perspective, and so there's an element that is extremely important, and that is community engagement. How does the community engage with the Office of Equity? Now, up to this point, it's been very much focused on moving the bureaus, which it should be, very much focused on training the government or helping the city become efficient and effective and to think through a lens because, you know, it's different to have knowledge of something and to begin to think through that knowledge. Those are two very separate things. I think what we've done to this point is help to expose or create a lens of knowledge but really not moved the thinking so that the evaluation is that way. So there's a great work that still needs to happen. However, with the community itself and the needs of the community, specifically people with disabilities and people of color, having access to and voices that speak for their needs and their concerns, while many have thought that the Office of Equity was given that charge, there is a need to kind of clarify that the office really has been put in place to work specifically with moving the city forward in order to be in a position to more adequately reflect. So there's a lot of work to be done. And I'll end with this illustration I was working with. And I should say that I've been a community trainer with the Portland Police Bureau as an equity trainer through the work that's been done and a variety of other bureaus that I've done some work with. But the illustration I want to use is some work I did with the city of Gresham and their police department. And the goal was to take the police department through a process of changing the lens and creating an equitable lens, and then to concurrently work with community and develop a opportunity for community to engage and engage in authentic and genuine manners, and then at some point to bring the two together. So after we have a prepared community of officers who can think through a lens, then bring the community together. What unfortunately happened was the officers didn't believe they needed the work, felt they were beyond the need to be adequately prepared. We had a great opportunity, and I think the right recipe for what's happening in the city, and yet we missed it. I would hate to see that happen in the city of Portland. And with what's going on nationally and what's happening here locally, I think it is quite clear that equity matters more now than ever. I think there's a great opportunity to do some significant work and to resource it and support it appropriately. So,
thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Council members. Joe McFerrin, President and CEO of Portland OIC and the Rosemary Anderson High School, a community-based organization that focuses on alternative high school for kids that don't make it in the public school system, but also work with a number of public agencies and departments to provide wraparound services to some of our low-income citizens and predominantly folks of color. I'm here in support of the office, the equity of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. Wanted to talk a little bit about my work and our organization's work, specifically with Black Male Achievement, but also share a little bit about how this office has impacted our organization. So, our organization, we have about 95 employees. And we're in six locations throughout the city and throughout the county. And first of all, I need to commend Dante for his leadership. I look at Dante as a mentor. I call on Dante for a lot of advice, not only about equity, but just about being a leader and running the organization. So I wanted to say that publicly. I really do appreciate that. I'm not surprised about the depth of the report. I thought the report was outstanding. It covered the touch points, and it covered the points that our citizens, I believe, are very interested in. In terms of Black male achievement that comes out of the office, I think it's spot on. I think the work that we're doing in employment and training to give young African-American males an opportunity to learn the skills necessary to take care of themselves and be self-sufficient and really bring relevance to their education has been huge. It has brought together a number of community-based organizations and advocates, and it's also brought together a number of African-American males who are successful that have an opportunity to then impact those young males. That work is going on. We're focusing on three areas, construction, IT, and then also working with work systems on the summer works internships and the year-round internships. And I commend the city because the city is and the county for taking on a number of those youth. As far as our organization is concerned, we've grown as an organization tremendously. When I started 22 years ago, at POIC in the high school, we were about 340,000 annual budget. Now we're close to $9 million, and we're serving more than 2,000 citizens in Portland of all ages. And as you can imagine, with that growth, it's tough to make sure that your staff and your organization has the kind of policies necessary to put them in a position to get the kind of outcomes that we're looking for. And Dante, through his office, walked our organization through a process, including our board and key staff members, and we developed an equity policy at Portland OIC that I believe will also get at some of the issues and concerns that have been expressed today that we're all aware of. And I think that what I will be able to do, along with our staff members and our board, is to share that work with other organizations. So I think that the impact goes beyond. I hear it was the first that I learned that the primary role of the office was for the city. I had no idea that that was the case. And that is because, as an outsider, it doesn't appear. So through Dante's leadership, what most of us in the community believe, that not only is he working internally with the city, but it feels like his responsibility is also to work with the community. So I appreciate you pulling that off, because I think a lot of folks will benefit from that. And so I'll end with, again, I'd like to get more involved. I'd like our organization to get more involved, because it's been beneficial. And I would like to encourage the council to support the office and meet the request, the budgetary request that Dante has expressed today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McFerrin.
Yes, sir.
And finally, I would just like to read a portion of the letter from Musa Olo, who's the president of the Somali American Council of Oregon. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners Fish, Udaly, Fritz, and Saltzman. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. Today, OEHR has a very capable, diverse, and professional staff and leadership. To anyone who wants to embrace, they can offer the tools and resources to achieve equity. One of my personal experiences with OEHR is the following. I was helping with a group of cab drivers that wanted to have their own company. As an owner, you pay approximately $300 a week instead of $700 a week when working for a company that's not your own. Many of these cab drivers were newcomers and were linguistically challenged. In their bid to get a cab company, they hit a dead end with the city. They were very frustrated with the system, and therefore I contacted OEHR, and they offered to help. OEHR has helped us navigate through the city's bureaucracy and help the cab drivers achieve their goal of cab ownership and get a piece of their American dream. Without OEHR's help, the other option was to spend tens of thousands of dollars in lawyers' fees, money that they cannot afford. Why is that so important for the city? OEHR's efforts to help these cab drivers has a double outcome value. They offer technical assistance to overcome barriers, and the city learns. So my request is that that you support this OEHR and its dedicated team and plan for the long term. With that in mind, we can achieve a repeatable and lasting success. Thank you very much, Musa Olo.
Thank you.
I'll stop and see if there's anybody signed up, and then come back and answer any questions you may have and ask you to accept the report.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Do we have people signed up for public testimony?
Yes, we do.
Eight people. Could we limit testimony to 2 minutes, please, just because we're running a little behind? I'm not going to be draconian about that, but at 2 minutes, I'll do this, which means start to wrap it up, if you could. Thank you. If you could call the first three.
Sharon Maxwell, is it just you or? Okay, you signed up three times, I thought. Okay. And we'll go with Ranfis Giantino Villatoro and Dana Coffey.
Want to go ahead and start, Sharon?
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. And just in my part of my presentation, I wanted to just play this little recording.
Sharon, before you do, and I should have reminded every, if you just state your name for the record, that'd be helpful.
Sharon Maxwell.
Thank you. And grow in his favor.
And what that is from Hidden Figures, part of the track of the women who were the scientists, the computers,